Welcome to Pentagon Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Here's your host, Tom Temin.
For years, the Pentagon has tried to set up systems to catch counterfeit parts that occasionally make their way into sensitive systems. It started requiring agencies to report counterfeits back in 2013. A year later, it started requiring contractors to report them. Since then, reports have steadily fallen. But why? For some answers, we turn to Marie Mack, Director of Acquisition and Sourcing Issues at the Government Accountability Office. Ms. Mack, great to have you back.
Good to be here.
All right, so on this report, it shows a steady drop from 2011 before the reporting requirement to just a handful in the past 3 years. And that seems like the opposite of what you would expect to happen. What's going on?
Well, back then, we also think the reports back in 2011 and 2012 were somewhat artificially high because there was a lot of congressional attention on the issues. And companies, when we looked into it a little more, companies had to go through their past purchases and identify and report previously undetected counterfeit parts. So, and also at that same time in 2011, the GIDEP program, which is the Government Industry Data Exchange Program, which DOD put in place, had granted an amnesty period where supplier names didn't have to be reported. So that may have also contributed to an increase in reporting. And contractors and defense agencies we spoke with have indicated they've implemented better systems since that time to avoid counterfeit parts after this early period. So they're encountering fewer new instances of counterfeit parts. However, as you can tell from our report, it is hard to tell if instances are really decreasing because we're not certain that everything that is being encountered is being reported.
Yeah, because if their names are now revealed and there's all this reporting that's public, that would tend to depress the numbers of reports, I would think, just because of reputational issues.
Right, absolutely. There's been some of those concerns as well.
And yet all of the reports in 2015, it looks like, or just about 99% of them, and all of them in 2014, came from contractors with the government not reporting any.
We did find that, but however, I want to present the other side, that it does make sense generally that the contractors would submit more reports since contractors are the ones that are often buying the parts that go into the weapon system. And we've heard from the folks that we spoke with, both on the contractor side and at the defense agencies, it's best that the reports are submitted by the people most knowledgeable about the purchase, so reporting really should be done by whoever originally bought the problematic parts. The premise is that the closer to the source, the better the reports will be. So it's not problematic in and of itself that most reporting is done by contractors. However, what we did find problematic is that there are cases where DOD agencies may not be reporting the suspect counterfeit parts when they are the most knowledgeable party.
Because you say there is not that much oversight established yet by central authorities over the agencies that would report them to DOD.
Absolutely. One of the biggest problems is because there's inconsistency and variability in how reporting is done is because DOD does not have a department-wide level oversight. And as a result, they can't ensure the data accurately, the data that is put into this GIDEP system is accurately reflected of the extent to which suspect counterfeit parts have been identified by defense agencies. And one of the findings that we found was that, for instance, Defense Logistics Agency, which plays a significant role in sustaining weapon systems, and they obtain many, many parts, thousands of parts, they may likely be underreporting suspect counterfeit parts into this GIDEP. But without that oversight at the higher levels, they weren't even aware of the Defense Logistics Agency's low level of reporting.
I was going to ask, the DLA you would think would be in charge of it, but really they're not. Who is the final authority for oversight across the government for all of this, across DOD anyway, for all of the counterfeit reporting?
Oversight really should be taking place at the Undersecretary of Defense for the Acquisition Technology and Logistics Office. Now, they do have, that office is involved, several different offices under the Undersecretary of Defense.
We'll just call it the ATL.
Yeah, ATL. They are involved, but their roles are separate, and it's somewhat decentralized. So there's nobody looking at overseeing GIDEP reporting overall at the department-wide level.
We're speaking with Marie Mack, Director of Acquisition and Sourcing Issues at the GAO. And looking at the reports that have come in, say, in 2014 and 2015, I'm looking at the bar chart you've published, maybe 50 counterfeit parts. It doesn't sound like a big number, considering all of the systems that DOD has delivered routinely, everything from radios to replacement platform devices. So does this look like there's a large number of counterfeits, or does it look like pretty small?
Again, it's really not a fair judgment to look at just those numbers because we don't think those numbers are accurately being reflected. Without a standardized process for determining the level of evidence that's needed to report a part of suspect counterfeit in GIDAP, that also is an issue. Some agencies will report it, and they're all supposed to report it within 60 days, according to the law, but some agencies will meet that standard and some don't. For instance, DLA did not. In many instances, we found that they did not, and that also causes a problem. If we don't have the full number of what's actually being reported and it's not accurate, then it's hard to tell what is really, if those numbers represent the counterfeit parts or not, true coverage of it all.
And looking at the reports that have come in, is there any way to characterize them? Do they cluster around certain contractors or certain systems?
We found that some of them are reported by the same contractors, but again, that categorization is not necessarily representative of what should be in the total whole. For instance, we found a lot of them were reported by independent distributors and some of the same companies reporting the same, you know, the same companies putting in the reports.
Because a lot of the manufacturers, the small ones anyway, would buy their components from distribution in the first place.
Exactly, especially if the original distributor was the original manufacturer is not available anymore or don't sell the parts, especially when it applies to DoD systems, because some of our systems are a lot older and the same companies don't sell those same parts anymore. So they do usually have to go to independent distributors if that's the case.
I guess the problem would be primarily located in older or obsolete parts or unavailable parts, because wouldn't you presume that any legitimate manufacturer selling now to DoD would be using distributors with authorized letters of supply from those OEMs?
To some extent, but it also depends on the contract, how the contract is laid out, and if there are the clauses being passed down to the subcontracting level that they must insist that the testing for the counterfeit parts occurs.
What have you recommended then for DoD at this point?
The first main recommendation is to put some mechanisms in place for department-wide oversight of the defense agency's compliance with this GIDAP reporting. And then the second one is to develop a standardized process for determining the level of evidence needed to report the part as suspect counterfeit in GIDAP. And then finally, to develop guidance for when access to GIDAP reporting should be limited to only government users or made available to industry. And then the last recommendation we made was industry has also been required to develop and maintain systems to detect and avoid counterfeit electronic parts. And the companies that we spoke with do have these systems in place, but we're asking for DoD to clarify to industry the criteria by which DoD assesses these contractor counterfeit detection and avoidance systems.
But that one, the DoD didn't agree with, that particular recommendation.
I think they agreed with it in context. They didn't feel like that we should be dictating, GAO should be asking them to provide specific implementation details. And our comment reply to that was we weren't asking for specific implementation details. For criteria, is clarifying criteria, I think, is still important, which is different than implementation details of what you're going to be looking for or what you're going to look for in terms of traceability or what you're going to look for in terms of how the companies can know if their testing is appropriate. Those are higher-level criteria of explaining what the DoD expects.
Sounds like people need to talk a lot more about this before there's any real assurance of what's going on.
Absolutely.
So at this point, is it fair to say that it's really impossible to tell whether the problem is getting worse or getting better or is just in stasis?
Correct. You're absolutely correct. And Congress has been doing a lot about this issue. And one of the reasons this started getting a lot of attention, as you mentioned early on, about why DoD was forced to start reporting into this GIDAP was because Congress had done their own investigation back in 2012 and found a lot of counterfeit parts in existence. So they directed DoD to use the GIDAP to report counterfeit incidents. And then in this 2015 included a provision for GAO to review this effort.
Well, sometimes when you flip on the kitchen light, the mice go scattering.
That's a good way to describe it.
All right, Marie Mack is Director of Acquisition and Sourcing Issues at the GAO. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Tom.
For a link to the report on counterfeits and to share this interview with colleagues, go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends.
You're listening to Pentagon Solutions on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. Now here's your host, Tom Temin.
Senators had choice words for the Pentagon's proposed personnel reforms during an armed services hearing. Unfortunately, this is a family show. But Defense Secretary Ash Carter continues his push for the force of the future. He says the initiative is needed to cultivate the next generation of DOD employees. Federal News Radio Scott Massioni has more on what DOD will need from Congress and how likely the department is to get it.
The Defense Department's Force of the Future initiative is taking fire from some Senate lawmakers, but this week, Defense Secretary Ash Carter punched back at criticisms. During a press conference at the Pentagon with Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman General Joseph Dunford, Carter explains why DOD needs to be focused on personnel issues in the face of multiple emerging threats.
Do we have to do all these things at the same time? Yeah, we have to make investments in future technology. We have to make investments, which is what this is about, human investments in continuing to have the very best and do all the things we're doing around the world. But let's just not forget, and that's what Force of the Future is all about, is that the reason our military is the best in the world is because of our people. The reason everybody likes to partner with us, exercise, train, operate with us, is they like working with our people. And the reason that we can conduct complicated operations like the one the chairman was talking to with respect to Libya about, and that we're doing in Syria and Iraq, where we're working with local forces who at the end have to sustain the victory. The reason we're so good at that is that we have these tremendous people, and we need to make sure that they stick with us and that we get a new generation. So that's a serious part of the preparation for future warfare. It's not about being like the civilian world. It's not like about being progressive. It's about being serious about our future.
If you're not familiar, the Force of the Future is a set of personnel reforms put into place by DOD. Most recently, the military expanded its maternity leave up to 12 weeks for new mothers. It was previously only 6 weeks. DOD also extended child care facilities hours. That was in response to service members saying the hours did not match up with the workday. Now child care will stay open at least 14 hours a day. Earlier reforms created a defense digital service to bring up top tech experts and programs to make it easier for people to move from the private sector to the public sector. Here's Carter again.
What we need to do is make sure that we attract in the future, and because remember, it's an all-volunteer force, that we can attract the very best and also that we can retain the very best. So that's why we look at such things as family programs, maternity leave, pay. All of these things are important to attracting and retaining the very best. Most of these do not, in fact, cost very much money. That's not really the principal limitation. Now, you know, I have to say, we're not a company, so we're not Walmart. We're not like anybody else in the civilian world, and we can't apply the same recruiting and retention tools that companies do. We can learn from them. Some things will be applicable, but this remains the profession of arms. And our objective here is simply force effectiveness.
When it comes to the blue chip initiatives in the Force of the Future, DOD is going to need some help from Congress. Those initiatives include possible TRICARE reform and compensation reforms. But during a nomination hearing last week, some senators weren't too impressed with the Force of the Future. One of the main concerns is spending money on reforms when there's an emergent China, an aggressive Russia, the Islamic State, and a handful of other threats to the United States. That's not to mention the equipment needs, modernization needs, and continual facility maintenance needs. Here's an exchange between Senator Mike Lee of Utah and DOD's nominee for Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness, Brad Carson, on the issue.
When I talk to people who were in the military, who were either in the military now or are considering a possible future in the military. They tend to express concerns that they go along the lines of making sure that they will receive adequate training, that the equipment that they will need to protect our country's national security will be up to par, and things like that. They're also concerned about things like how we treat our veterans and how we treat military personnel, how we compensate them, and so forth. I don't think I've ever met a service member or a prospective service member who has expressed concern about going into the military or continuing to serve in the military on the basis that the military is not the most progressive employer in the nation. So Perhaps you're hearing something different than what I'm hearing. Where is this coming from?
Sir, the survey data done by the Defense Equal Opportunity Management Institute, by various marketing agencies that work under the Department of Defense, suggests that the reason that women are leaving in droves, with a retention rate only one-third that of men through 10 years, only one-half through 20 years, is because of family concerns. And perhaps anecdotally, because I think the anecdotes are really important, Senator, if you go to somewhere like Harvard Business School, it will seem like the entire 75th Ranger Regiment has decamped to the classes up there. And you ask them why they would leave. Why would these extraordinary soldiers leave a unit as high speed as the Ranger Regiment? And they will tell you that the bureaucracy, especially around personnel, weighed them down. And they no longer felt that they could realize what they wanted in their own lives in military service. That's what we're trying to change.
Chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, John McCain, also says he has concerns about the force of the future. Here he is during the hearing.
Many of these Force of the Future proposals appear to be solutions in search of a problem. We are eager to learn what clearly identified problems you propose solving with your proposals. And of course, we want a full description of the background research, cost analysis, and analysis of the impact on military readiness that served as the foundation for the development of such proposals. I find it deeply disturbing that you are proposing to add expensive fringe benefits allegedly aimed at retention during a time when we're asking 3,000 excellent Army captains to leave the service who would have otherwise chosen to remain on active duty. From my perspective, this initiative has been an outrageous waste of official time and resources during a period of severe physical constraints. It illustrates the worst aspects of a bloated and inefficient defense organization. I look forward to your explanations and empirical data on this important issue.
A lot of the Force of the Future proposals are aimed at retaining and recruiting women. Women have been leaving the military and DOD in droves because it's unaccommodating to family life. It seems like DOD is going to have a tough time with Congress getting any of its Force of the Future initiatives through. Senator Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma asked the Senate Armed Services Committee to hold off on the nomination of Brad Carson due to whistleblower allegations Inhofe heard. That's a problem for DOD considering Carson is the architect of the Force of the Future. Inhofe says he read reports of a hostile work environment under Carson's leadership. He asked the committee to delay the vote until a command climate assessment could be conducted on Carson's office. Command climate assessments are traditionally performed in the military and look at the health and functioning of a commander organization. The assessment digs into factors like morale, communication, teamwork, and diversity through surveys and interviews. Carson says he was unaware of any issues under his leadership and objected to the characterization. In Washington, Scott Massioni, federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends. I'm Tom Temin.
You've been listening to Pentagon Solutions. Download this show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search Pentagon Solutions.